Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, once again to PWT Talks NXT. We're going to talk about the many, many things that happened on NXT September 23rd, 2020. And as I just said to the guys before the show, hopefully my voice will give out because this was a really, really busy show. I had uveitis again last night. It is awful. You don't want it. I'm not going to go through what it is this time, but you don't want it. And I'm very dehydrated, been pounding water all day. So if I leave, it's either because my voice is wrecked or because I've been pounding water all day. So hopefully I'll make it. Cause we have a very, let's say, busy episode of NXT to talk about. Stops the train of, we've seen some pretty good shows a few in a row. And then it seemed that, that NXT wanted to surprise itself with a takeover, and all of a sudden they had to put together. So we got a 5-man gauntlet eliminator. We couldn't call it something better. We had to call it that. Women's battle royal that had 18 to 20 women. I didn't count. And then a wacky tag match, probably necessitated by COVID, considering Bobby Fish wasn't around during the Undisputed Era.
Hey.
We'll get there. What a busy show. What a weird show. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm your host. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. You can email our show at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. You can call us at 515-605-9345. Let me say hey to the usual gang of idiots. Tom Stelp.
Yeah, Bobby Fish and, well, I won't single them out because they do a good enough job of doing that already on social media. If you know, you know, and you can insert the clapping hand emojis between my words here. This is what happens. Yeah, if you follow these people on social media, you know that they have not exactly been safe. And here we are with the results of that. But I am at Tom Stelp on Twitter. I am the guy who did count the 19 women in the Battle Royal, and I'm looking forward to breaking that down.
So you're saying 18 to 20 is correct?
Yes. If you hadn't brought up the Bobby Fish thing, I would have tried to make a joke about that. but yeah, if you hadn't heard already, Rich Fan and I did a podcast about She-Ra, the Netflix and DreamWorks remake of She-Ra. That is the most recent episode of The Deep Dive with Rich Fan on the Daily Cast feed. And if you're wondering why the hell would they do a podcast about She-Ra, well, listen.
Okay, and I will be on a podcast here in this coming week on the Blake and Sal show. They have me on every now and then. They have a bunch of us from the Torch on every now and then. They bring me on when NXT and when New Japan are about to do major shows. And is this takeover a major show? I'm not so sure it is, but it will have championship matches on it, and it will be on a Sunday. So we will treat it as such. Let's say hey to Nate Lindberg.
What's going on, guys? At Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I write the NXT hits and misses, which usually drops Thursdays or Fridays. I, too, will be on a podcast, my other podcast, the Deejcast, where we talk about RPGs and therapy. And this week, we're going to be talking with the creator of Ghost Ops, the game we're playing on our YouTube channel right now, to talk to him about his game and how it got created and the military-style game and, you know, his story. It's actually a really cool story he's got. So check it out if you're interested in gaming or the military or the sound of my voice.
Okay, well, main event, Gauntlet Eliminator. It is it's 5 men, starts with 2. Every 4 minutes, another one comes in, and elimination happens via pinfall or submission. Kyle O'Reilly and Kushida were the first 2 in, as you might think, that these are guys who can go a long time, although, you know, Thatcher and Grimes probably can too, so whatever. But wasn't surprised by the way we started. O'Reilly and Kushida start off. Reed is third, and Kushida is eliminated at this point because Velveteen Dream makes the run in and does the Dream Valley Driver to Kushida, leaving him open to Tsunami, the big frog splash by Bronson Reed, and Reed eliminates Kushida. Number four, Timothy Thatcher. Number five, Cameron Grimes. It's a long time before the next elimination, which happens at 21:35, which is Reed by O'Reilly. Then at 25:14, it's Thatcher by O'Reilly. And at 27:48, it is Grimes by O'Reilly. So they did not wuss out and do the usual gauntlet thing, which is B eliminates A, C eliminates B, D eliminates C. That is what normally happens in these because everybody's got to go over. They did not wuss out like that. They really put O'Reilly over huge, which if they're going to go with O'Reilly, they're going to have to go big because he has no – it's not that he's a failed singles wrestler. He just isn't one at all in this company. So he's had successful singles runs elsewhere in the past, Ring of Honor notably, but has not done any of it here. I am very, very excited to see this. And have thought that this would probably happen with O'Reilly for some time because he is significantly younger, 68 years younger than Bobby Fish. So he's going to have some time in his career where he's going to be alone. So maybe this is the shot he gets. So he goes over, and then Adam Cole and Roderick Strong come out to celebrate, and Tom Phillips refers to it as the rest of the Undisputed Era boys, which to me calls out more attention to the fact that Bobby Fish isn't there because you know what he's not saying. Like he could have just said it's Strong and Cole, but no, he said the rest of the UE when two of the only three are missing. So that was silly. But at any rate, on a show with a lot of wrestling minutes, 70 minutes and 23 seconds, which is way high. This was the main event, which went 27:48. And we have our number one contender, Tom.
Yeah, you're right about the way those gauntlet matches usually break down. I just watched one on Saturday that was part of a deathmatch indie event, which is not normally the kind of thing that I would watch, but it was streaming on Twitch and YouTube, and it was the first wrestling event in the Orlando area to have fans back, and they did require masks and they did require at least some degree of distancing. But I have a detailed report of that up on the Torch. It's called No Peace Underground from the 19th. And I also talk about how well they did with the, with all the COVID restrictions and whatnot, which was hit and miss, but you can read up on that if you want. Yeah. When you break it down, I was very happy with the five competitors that they ended up with here. But when you broke it down, looking at possibilities, it really seemed like O'Reilly was the one that they were going to go with. I just couldn't see, as much as I would love to see Cameron Grimes go to TakeOver against Finn Balor, you just can't see them going with him. Timothy Thatcher just wrestled Finn Balor at TakeOver. Reed and Kushida are baby faces. They can wrestle Balor, but it, really looking at the options and the most dramatic match finish here, it just mathematically broke down to the odds were in O'Reilly's favor. So awesome that they gave him all those falls. The match was perfectly fine. I have been loosely theorizing for quite a while now. However much that's actually bubbled up on the podcast here, I'm not sure. I know it has now and again, but it's been a loose theory that I think Kyle O'Reilly could break away and be an NXT champion. And over the past couple weeks, I've really become much more galvanized that I feel like that's absolutely in his future, to the point where I think that if this continues to go well for him, eventually end up being ranked right alongside Sami Zayn as some of the most feel-good title wins in the belt lineage. I really just think that's written in the stars for him. Again, assuming everything continues to go swimmingly. So because of all of that, and because Balor is still a very, very new champion, I didn't really want to see O'Reilly win here, but I presume that it's probably all part of the overarching Undisputed Era story that they're telling. So for this part of it, I'm along for the ride. For as sudden as most other things in the development to this TakeOver, or as I jokingly said to you guys earlier, take under, as sudden as all those things are, I'm along the ride for this one.
You know what was weird to see Cole with the Undisputed Era guys because he hasn't been doing that. It was really weird to see him alongside them and the three of them together and then just not acknowledging, hey, Roddy, you've been a heel and we're kind of doing this other thing, us two. But
especially coming off, like Adam Cole just had such a prominent match with Pat McAfee, and it feels like he's really geared down since then, which is weird. I mean, I know he just won that Iron Man match and faced Finn Balor for the championship, but I just felt like there wasn't much characterization going on there, and he never felt like the guy who was going to win it to me. So, so there's that. And then I guess it is worth mentioning. I really thought that this hyperextended elbow thing was their way of going, oh wow, we made a mistake putting Dream back on TV. Let's write him right back out. But nope.
Yep. I thought the fact that they didn't announce the five people last week meant that they didn't know what they wanted to do. And then when they announced the five people later, I thought, okay, they knew what they needed to do, but nope. Okay, so let's go to email because we got a couple of those, and then I'll throw to Nate. This is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. Good Wednesday evening to you all. Woo, what a great gauntlet match. I love Kyle O'Reilly in this spot and think he has the potential to be a great takeover championship, to have a great takeover championship match. I especially love that Cole and Strong came out to congratulate him on the win. What are we supposed to take from Bobby Fish's absence, if anything? COVID. As it relates to the Women's Battle Royale, I understand why it was done, but I still feel that either everyone gets an intro or no one should get one. It doesn't present well, in my opinion. What storyline are you most excited about seeing more from outside of the finish? I love that they could advance four or five storylines from this match, and each one would have my attention. Lastly, despite his win-loss record as of late, I'm very encouraged by Jake Atlas's positioning against Ciampa. I think we talked about this previously, but now he has more screen time under his belt. What do you see as Jake's ceiling in NXT? Thanks, as always. Office hours are now over. Atlas, I think, has a mid to high ceiling, maybe. I think maybe he could be North American champion, but there's no seat at the table right now.
I 100% agree with that.
Yep, he's got to do the Bronson Reed thing, wait his turn, but I believe his turn probably will come. As for the Women's Battle Royal, we'll talk about that plenty. And I love seeing Kyle in this spot as well. Let me quick read this trifle from Brian Alston. Howdy, friends. To merge two podcasts, have you considered the unidentified faceless voice that asks wrestlers questions is Briley Pierce? And is Briley related to WWE official Adam Pierce? Have a good night, Brian Alston. And then he said, would have been much funnier if I spelled Adam Pierce's last name correctly. Briley Pierce, if you're not listening to NXT 8 years back, and you should be, because Tom and I are having a blast doing it, Briley Pierce is the real-life brother of Dolph Ziggler, and he was a wrestler / announcer in the early days of NXT, and yikes. But there you go. Let me throw main event to Nathaniel Lindberg.
All right. So main event. I liked the finish. I really liked the Kyle O'Reilly finish, as well as the rest of the match. So I know from the way I started, it sounded like I probably didn't like the match, but Kyle O'Reilly seemed to me, for a lot of those same reasons you guys just mentioned, but he seemed to me like kind of the most de facto person to come out on top here. He's basically the person to. That should have, I think should have won, because you take a look at, Bronson Reed, and even though he's gotten a pretty decent push and pretty decent run as of late, a headline of Finn Balor versus Bronson Reed just didn't really, it didn't really get me too excited. Even though I'm really high on Bronson Reed, it just didn't seem like that marquee match. Same thing with, Timothy Thatcher. Even though I thought their match at TakeOver was great, I mean, it just happened. So I didn't really think Thatcher was, going to come out victorious here. Kushida was kind of a wild card. I really did not expect him to get eliminated first. I thought that he had a shot here. a small one, a very small shot, a very small chance of actually winning, but I thought he had one. Just because of the past few weeks, he's come out with this fire that we haven't seen out of him. And, you know, and even Kelly, you've said, you know, you didn't see it out of him even in New Japan. So I kind of thought that, you know, that might've been a little bit of a, I don't know, might've been a red herring. I think that might've been part of it, but I thought that might have told a little bit of a story for Kushida as to how he could potentially come out on top here. Kushida versus Balor would be a great match, so I was thinking that might be a possibility.
Well, that's a match that certainly has happened in New Japan.
Oh, I'm sure.
Back when he was when Finn was Prince Devitt, I thought that this was definitely the wrong time for Kushida. I'd love to see him get up there, but I think if he's there and he loses that match, then he falls off the tightrope that he's walking right now as a reclamation project.
Yeah, there's no if he did lose, he would basically fall down the card pretty rapidly. And I think you're right there. So like I said, it was one of those I was putting a little bit of stock into, but not a whole heck of a lot. Kind of mostly for that reason is, he has been that, I like that term, reclamation project. I didn't really think that, I just didn't see it happening. And same thing with Cameron Grimes. As much as I love Cameron Grimes, I mean, all three of us do, again, Cameron Grimes versus Finn Balor for the title did not seem like that big marquee match. Maybe somewhere down the road, but, I just didn't seem like it for me. Kyle O'Reilly, where I still think it doesn't necessarily to most people, I don't think it necessarily stands off the page as like a marquee match, because similar to what you said earlier, Kelly, Kyle hasn't been a singles competitor, at least in the NXT environment. Kind of might just seem a little strange to people that, here's a tag wrestler that is now, thrust into a singles position, but, knowing that he has been a singles in the past, and just everything that I've seen out of him, over the past year that I've been doing the show with you guys, it seemed like it that was kind of the direction that they were leaning, especially too with all of the different directions that everybody in Undisputed Era has taken. It kind of seemed like Kyle O'Reilly was being positioned for that spot, and ultimately that is what ended up happening. Thumbs up 100% for me there. I'm kind of thinking too that, if like, obviously, this is obviously part of the Undisputed Era story that they're telling, but like, the dissension in the ranks that we keep talking about, are we going to start seeing that come to a head? Is Kyle O'Reilly going to have that feel good title win, like Tom was saying, and then Adam Cole, maybe, he's been acting babyface this whole time. Maybe all of a sudden, well, now he's jealous that, he doesn't have his title, but his buddy's got it, and that's, that kind of starts. I don't know. There's so many different ways that they could go with it, but I like it. I'm on board. And I think Kyle is absolutely deserving of this spot. He's got a lot of mileage left. And I think it's definitely well worth, tapping into that and letting him show what he can do.
I liked the first handful of minutes of this match, and I liked the last handful. The middle minutes for me were some of the more convoluted negative four-way minutes that you see where guys pair off and they just literally take turns sliding in and out of the ring to do different one-on-one matches in a four-way match. There was a lot of that, and it was comical how shamelessly they were just doing it, sliding out and sliding and a guy going in as if they were just tagging into this four-way match. But I did really like the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes, and nothing was wrong with the rest of it. It was a little contrived. So that was our main event. Kyle O'Reilly is your winner and goes on to potentially the main event of TakeOver. But I would tap LeRae and Shirai, which is a very, very surefire match. Although maybe you put – if Kyle's going to win, then put that on last. But he's probably not. So maybe put it on first or third. So anyway, let's go to the phone lines. And no shortage of topics bizarre or interesting for Darrell to talk about us with. But let's see where Darrell is with this show. Darrell, what did you think of tonight's show?
How you guys doing today? And today's show was okay.
Yeah, it was okay. It was very, very busy is the only way I can put it.
Yes, we had some interesting things. I start off with one that's unique and usually when they do their packages where they hype somebody up. That package of whoever they had who said he was he's back and he's looking and it looked like he was a robber or something. He threw the pipe into the to smash the glass to get the NXT title. I want to know who you guys think, and I guess what he appear on the 4th at the pay-per-view.
That's a good question. I apparently did not see this segment. I don't know when this segment happened. I don't know if Hulu thought that it was commercial. I didn't see it. Tom, did you?
Yeah. Sort of looked like maybe like a what you might see as some amalgam of futuristic high-tech recon, ghost recon vision in a 1999 movie. Like direct to DVD maybe. I'm dissing it as sort of a joke, and it looked like that, but I was intrigued by it. And even though I'm not sure heading straight for the NXT championship, as the video suggested, is where I would put this guy, not that I'm the expert on him, my guess is that it's Josh Briggs, the Evolve champion who recently got signed. Even refreshing my memory on the guys that they have in developmental, right, or, you know, as trainees right now who haven't had a prominent role on TV, like your Daniel Vidoes, your Cal Blooms, that kind of thing. Nobody stands out as somebody who could have gotten that video package. So I think it's Josh Briggs.
Okay. Nate.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
I did see it. And I enjoyed the video package, and, you know, like Tom said, it was certainly, you know, certainly cheesy and stuff like that. But it was intriguing. It kind of reminded me almost of that, like the, I think it was the SmackDown hacker that they kind of just never went anywhere with over the past couple months.
The SmackDown hacker who, when you looked at the videos on their video board, they were just watching WWE Network.
Yeah, you know, it kind of, you know, it was a little bit reminiscent of that, but just the whoever this guy was had a bigger room and the NXT title in like a glass case or something like that. I don't know. And, you know, I was kind of thinking that it could be somebody new. You know, names in particular didn't really come to me, but I was thinking it could be somebody new. But the thing that stood out to me is he said, come back for the title. I'm pretty sure he did. I'm pretty sure he said something about coming back for the title.
Did he? And, yeah, Darrell said that too.
And
I didn't pick up on that specific bit of it.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking to myself, like, who is that? Like, who could be coming back for the title? And, I mean, obviously there's a short list of NXT champions. So it's like, I don't know if he's coming back for the title that he never won or if it's a former champion that's coming back to do something. The only name... And this is a weird one, but the only name that I can think of is Bo Dallas.
Jumped into my head just now, believe it or not.
Yeah, we haven't seen him on TV in God knows how long. He hasn't done anything of note in, I mean, Jesus, since he left NXT. I mean, you know, yeah, fine. Some of the stuff that he did with The Miz and Curtis Axel was amusing, but I mean, he never reached that same level of success that he did in NXT. So it wouldn't be far-fetched for him to either request or be asked to go back down to NXT. And it would certainly fit that whole comeback for the title thing. So I'm throwing it out there, Bo Dallas, but I mean, it's up in the air. Who knows?
I love the idea.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not Lars Sullivan.
That's the other name that came.
I shouldn't even say it aloud.
And
please don't.
I'm sure I wouldn't think for this kind of thing that they would get a stand-in. They did not, you know, they only showed the person from behind, but the shoulders were not nearly that broad. So I don't think we have to worry about that one.
All right. All right. I don't know. I'm gonna say it's the same person behind GTV, and it's the same person who raised the briefcase. With the age-old questions will finally be answered. Darrell, what else from tonight?
Okay. Today, I don't know who that would be either. And he did say he's coming back for the title. He's making his debut on TakeOver. So that was unique. So if they having somebody who they're trying to hype as big for that TakeOver title match, and I guess he's coming at the end of that match. I don't think too much of that Kyle O'Reilly would be winning. And I was always assuming that Kyle O'Reilly might feud with Tommaso Ciampa, by the way, how they put him over Jake Atlas and how he could have pinned him with the Widow's, I forgot what he called it, but the DDT
Willow's Bell.
Off the rope. Yeah, Widow's Bell. So that's where I was thinking next. Other than that, we had some feuds set up in that women's over the top rope battle royal, and I like what they did. I like how they had Candice LeRae take out Tegan Knox. It seemed like anything dealing with her knee, that's all that we know about her. And so having her take out her with a knee and things like that, I think that's going to lead to something when they have TakeOver. But I like that they still going with Rhea Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley. Also, they started, I guess, a Shotzi and Dakota Kai feud. How did you guys like everything that happened in that Battle Royale? I know Battle Royals are so contrived and making it for a number one contendership, but what did you guys think about all of those outcomes that came out of that?
Normally, I would not be in favor of just bringing up a bunch of girls to die in this thing just because they're not going to get any shine. They only got first names. Like, they didn't even get last names when they were announced. And two of them back-to-back didn't even – it was not said who they were at all. Normally, I would not be in favor of that. But they wanted to do the dueling eliminations with Rhea and Raquel, so it made perfect sense to throw them out there to die, because we will not remember that they were thrown out to die when they make TV 3 to 6 to 15 months from now. So that didn't bother me. As for things moving forward, love what they did with Tegan. I think this moves Tegan and Candice forward a hell of a lot better than a fourth place finish in the Battle Royal would have. I think it does a lot more that she didn't just take away her shot cleanly in the ring. She didn't even allow her a shot to get into this Battle Royal. I like that a lot. The Dakota Shotzi thing is small and it's going to be blown off next week. It's great. As long as Dakota wins. Then Rhea and Raquel, I figured when they finally came to blows immediately, I saw that double elimination coming. But I'm still in favor of it. I think that's fun. What they did with Casey with the near eliminations, of course, you knew they were going to do that. They have the benefit of, I think this one was taped, but they also were very careful to when that plexiglass bent and it looked like Casey was going to fall with the plexiglass, they quick got the camera off her just in case the worst happened and she hit the ground because she wasn't supposed to yet. The first one of those spots is so stupid because she falls on her back outside the ring, nothing touching anything except the floor, and it's just her feet. That spot does nothing for me. But the other stuff she did was good, and then the very ending spot they did with Candice sliding down the steps and then launching Shotzi from the steps was beautiful. Absolutely loved it. I like where they're headed. I like Candice being rewarded for just A1 heel work. And we know that Candice and Io is an absolute sure thing where they stole a show where they were the only non-championship match. We already saw them do this. So what am I the most excited about? That by far, but I think we're going to have a lot of fun in this other stuff too. 15 minutes and 10 seconds. Tom, I know you got these names written down, and some of them you can give us a little bit more insight on. Let me read an email from Bruce Lee. because he asked something of that nature. So let me get this straight. Basically, Kelly and Tom are teaming up with to face Nate and I, and if the former win, then Kelly tags with Mike Taylor while Tom tags with Rich Fan and face each other. But if Nate and I win, then Nate tags with Harley Padgett and I tag with Travis Bryant against each other, and whoever wins those potential machinations then faces tag team champion Bar Soap Brigade, Mike McMahon, and Andrew Suchet. Did I get that right? Why not just run a four-team tournament? Deep breath to the Women's Battle Royal. Could the three of you possibly give some background on Gia Roman, Raven, Ellie, and Rita Reese? Who's the one to watch of the four, if any? Thanks for taking the email. Stay positive and sane with all the BS going on, and stay safe by wearing your masks. VIP member Bruce Lee, PhD, from Seattle. Tom, you're the most likely to know who some of these women are.
Yeah, and I'll just open by saying that this is one of those situations where I kind of hate myself for not saying my real prediction last week, because now that I'm going to say what I wanted to say last week after it turned out to be right, it's just going to sound like I'm reframing things to fake having been right. But last week when we were talking about
fake news,
when we were talking about the Battle Royal winner, I fell in line. I was just like, okay, yeah, the safe pick is Rhea Ripley. All right. But the whole time I was thinking Candace, and here we are. So I should have just blurted that out. But yeah, I love that that's the direction. I think I agree with what you said about it, Kelly. These people being brought in for cannon fodder. And I mean, there were only, by my count, there are only two women on the active or even available roster of both trainees and just NXT women that were not represented in the Battle Royal. And that depends whether or not you count Vanessa Bourne. I am not sure what the situation is with her. But minus Vanessa Bourne, only two people were not in this. And then the ones who, as it sounds like a plane is about to crash into my apartment. Okay, anyway, that aside, if I get quiet, that's you know what happened. The ones he asked about, or actually I'll just cover all of the ones that could potentially get asked about here. The first elimination was Gia Roman, and I have never actually seen her wrestle before, but I know that she is the champion at local promotion / training school, Pro Wrestling 2.0. It's located very close to the new location of the Devon Dudley Academy. If anybody listening knows where that is, since Devon promotes that a lot, it's very close to that. Lots of people who you've probably seen wrestle on various indies or AEW Dark have trained there. Tessa Blanchard is trained there. A bunch of people. And they get wrestlers sometimes, not anymore, but I know Cedric Alexander trained there. Taught classes there. Jack Gallagher taught classes there for a while, and that's while they were under contract with WWE. So there seems, I wouldn't go as far as to say there's a relationship there, but there's an acknowledgement of like, yeah, it's okay. If there's some crossover, that's fine. You can do that. So Gia Roman is their champion. Second out is, they called her Raven. And there was only one female I could find under the name Raven. And it was just an Instagram account where she called herself a wrestling manager, but I couldn't see anything like watch me on NXT tonight or anything. And some of these women, like, you couldn't even see their faces. They got thrown out so quick and the focus was not on them. So nothing on Raven. Ellie mostly wrestles in the Southeast area, but she kind of wrestles all over a bunch of different promotions. She calls herself Dream Girl Ellie. As I discovered by trying to look up more about her, if you too, you can DM her to get certain photographs. She puts that out there as something that she offers. Number four out was Marina Shafir. I think people know who she is. Number five out was Avery Taylor, who is the champion at Action Combat Wrestling in Tampa. And I don't really know too much else about her other than that. And then we moved on to, well, Brandi Lauren. I think people know who Brandi Lauren is. She was recently signed. And prior to this, most recently seen in the hot tub with Damian Priest. And then the other one that was specifically asked about was, it does look like Rita Reese, and I was saying it like that for a while until I finally heard it pronounced, and it's Rita Rays, like a ray from the sun, I guess. And she's been signed for a while. I have never seen her work, and I don't really count tonight as having seen her work. I don't know. I've been following her for a while, and I just haven't really seen anything substantial. She posts a lot of pictures on Instagram that makes it seem like she's forcing herself to smile, and I'm just like, girl, just be happy. And that's all I got for you on Rita Race, but, you know, hopefully she surprises me and she's awesome. I really like the finish on the stairs. Like you, Kelly, I love, these sorts of matches, especially Royal Rumbles. And I can't remember one that ever had a finish that happened on the stairs. So I thought that was pretty groovy. And, I think the main thing that I really responded to, there was like some subtext here, was just the focus on Casey Catanzaro. And I've said for a while, going back to when I was predicting that she would show up in the first ever Women's Royal Rumble that she showed up in. And then she showed up in the other one. And I went as far as to predict that she would be doing the Kofi Kingston thing. This is obviously the spot where they're going to keep going back to that. But I like that they put that much focus on her, because I think we're finally at long last on the verge of a slow but sure Casey Catanzaro rise.
And she went final four. And Indy Hartwell went final five. We know she reached TV, but she even got to outlast the two beasts that eliminated each other. So she didn't get to eliminate anyone, but I don't know. Give her a few minutes and see what happens. Women's Battle Royal, Nate.
Yeah. So I liked the finish. Like you guys said, I don't know if I've ever seen a Battle Royal finish that took place on the stairs like that before. Other than that, I want to say that I liked this match, and I typically really enjoy Battle Royals. Kelly and I have said this before, like the Royal Rumble is a match that we look forward to all year long. So usually this style of match is something that I look forward to. And then on top of that, you throw in all the NXT women, and I figured I was, maybe my expectations were high going to, like really high going to this match. I don't know. But I just felt like it was a little too chaotic and messy at times, especially in the beginning, just, you know, when, you know, and any battle royal is going to be a little chaotic when you have everybody in the ring. I just felt like this one maybe especially so. However, that being said, I really like the Reyna and Rhea angle here. The double eliminations, as we, you guys are talking about, where I've said this in the past, both of them have a very similar gimmick. So I'm really looking forward to seeing them finally come to blows. I know, yes, Tom's talked about them, teaming before, before they hit TV, and I think possibly feuding or something like that, before they hit TV. But I'm looking forward to finally seeing this, as a proper feud on NXT TV. It's certainly intriguing, and those are both women that I'm really high on. So, really looking forward to that. I also was kind of, I noticed Casey, being, in the final four, and that obviously that says something. You don't usually wind up in the final four of this style of a match, whether it be Battle Royal, Royal Rumble, whatever, but a multiple person match. You don't usually wind up in the final four unless they see something in you, and they clearly must hear with Casey. And as I think they should. I mean, the fact that she's got that American Ninja style warrior, or America, you know what I mean, American Ninja Warrior style. There we go. I finally got the proper order of those words. She's got that style, and it is, relatively unique. I like her. I think she's got a lot of charisma, and she could certainly be be a star for these guys if she sticks with it. And obviously her kind of surprise return to wrestling a few months back means maybe she is sticking with it. So I'm thumbs up and on board with that. There was one other thing that I wanted to say, and it's slipping my mind. It had something to do with the finish, and I don't remember what. So if I think of it, I'll bring it back up later. But, we got a lot more to talk about, so we'll move on.
Indeed. And I had something I wanted to throw in, but I didn't, because I was going to try to help you think of your thing. So I guess
always looking out for me.
What happened? So, you know what? I remembered it was, I thought the optics were a little funny, that we had a COVID outbreak in NXT, and the first match was a 19 person battle royal. Elephant in the room, I guess. But what are you going to do? They did it. They had a battle royal. Darrell, what else did you think?
Okay. And I like how they continue to build the promo videos for Isaiah Swerve Scott. I like everyone they've done with him so far. I like that he called out. He called out his opponent. I'm hoping that this title could finally be defended at a takeover. What do you guys think? If they haven't came out the card, would him and Escobar be on takeover? And how did you guys like this small, quick video package?
It would be so cruel if this was not on takeover, because there's an issue here. We're going to have a thrown together tag match that comes together next week. We threw together women's matches and championship matches this week, and that one actually has an issue and history and reason to believe that the challenger can win the championship. And it's got the champion of what has been the hottest division. It cooled off in the last few weeks as there haven't been much content on TV, but a really, really strong division. So I would be a little bit annoyed if this didn't make it. I guess it was also odd that we didn't get any Dane and Drake this week, but I guess that'll have to wait for next week, because we did get 70 minutes in the ring this week. So where were you going to put them? So, I love Swerve. I continue to love Swerve. I didn't know how much I needed his segment until he showed up, and I was like, hell yeah. I was very excited to see it. It was no frills. But as he said, you know that I'm better than you, and the next time I am going to take that title. It was it was meat and potatoes stuff with Swerve's signature style, which made it rise above how by the numbers that it really was. And I don't know if this will make takeover, but I really, really think it should. Nate?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if it's going to make takeover either, but it would be almost criminal if it doesn't. This is, you know, as I've said multiple times before on the show, you know, Escobar has really raised that title up to, you know, a very prestigious level. It would be a shame if this match doesn't take place on takeover. You know, Swerve is also somebody that, you know, I've been high on. We all have, you know, since, well, even before his debut with you, but, you know, for me, I wasn't really too familiar with Shane Strickland before he became Swerve's here. So, ever since he debuted, I've been like super, super high on him. Everything I've gone back and watched as him, with him as, you know, as being Shane Strickland has been amazing. So I think this is definitely well deserved. The vignette tonight, I missed half of it. I was kind of scrolling through the commercials, and I came in halfway through it, and I was about 20 minutes behind, so I didn't scroll back and watch the beginning of it. But the part that I did see, I liked. I'm glad that they, you know, they are giving him this focus, you know, and putting a little bit more focus on this feud. I'm hoping that it does make it to takeover, because, like, you know, like you said, I mean, you know, kind of a thrown together tag match, you know, and just really a thrown together pay per view altogether. This is one feud that they've put a lot of time and effort into thus far, but it's also one that, you know, people are invested in. They want to see, and it's you know, for the, well, you know what, you use the term reclamation project. I'm going to use that again. The reclamation project of the cruiserweight title. You know, the cruiserweight title's never been a major, you know, focus for the WWE, and that even going back to the light heavyweight title back in the 90s, it's never been a focus for them. So the fact that now, you know, they're doing something meaningful with it, I would really, really like to see it a takeover, because it would add that extra prestige to the title. You know, I go back to, I forget how many WrestleManias it was at this point, but it was an Austin Aries match. And it was one of the matches that kind of pissed him off to the point where he left the company, which isn't hard to do with Austin Aries, but
he didn't leave the company. He got fired.
Well, he got fired, but
yes, it was largely believed that he was unhappy and left, but then he came out and said, no, I was fired.
Yeah. Yeah. No, now that you say that, I do remember that. But yeah, you're just, I forget who that match was against, but it got, you know, it was a WrestleMania match. It was on the pre-show, but it got left off of like the DVDs.
Neville.
And it was Neville. I was thinking Neville, but I didn't want to say it. But you know, it got left off all the DVDs and things like that, you know, so it's clear that the Cruiserweight title has never been a focus. So, I would love to see it hit TakeOver, get that little extra prestige rub, if you will, and, you know, actually have one hell of a match between two guys that would give us one hell of a match for that belt.
Oddly, I thought that was the last time that it was in a place that was even sniffing where it is now, when Neville had that run. And yeah, when everybody was saying Austin Aries had to do the job to Neville, and I'm like, well, of course he did. Neville's the better wrestler. Like, Neville,
yeah,
he couldn't lace Neville's boots. That's a little strong, but Neville is just so good. Anyway, on the Cruisers, Tom.
I think you guys covered it quite sufficiently and agreeably. So I'll just take the opportunity to say that after only seeing one match from her, I am quite sold on Aoife Valkyrie, and that might sound like a random statement, but I'm mentioning it because I noticed that, Darrell, you are the new PW Torch NXT UK hits and misses columnist, I believe. And if that's not new, I apologize, because I hadn't noticed it before, but I wanted to at least highlight that for you.
Wow. It's funny to me that you're just getting to know Aoife Valkyrie, because she was around for a little while. She was one of the projects that was just coming to the forefront at the end of NXT UK before everything went to hell.
They showed some highlight reels of her at the tapings.
Okay.
For whatever that's worth. But that was still at a period where I was like, oh, God, the men in NXT UK are so boring. I'm not tuning into that show.
Yeah.
Even if Jazzy Gabbard is on it. I kept telling myself, and when they start pushing Jazzy, that's when I'm going to tune back in. But alas.
I've been watching, and they've done more to vary that group. But part of what I was starting to like about it is Ridge Holland, and alas, Ridge is not there anymore. Aoife's real good in the ring. As a character, still, I feel kind of coming together. I mean, the look is there, but we'll see. High hopes for her. But yeah, we'll see. Darrell, go ahead.
And yes, newly.
Excellent. Well, the first one was a good one. I enjoyed reading it.
Okay, thank you.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, and they did start a rivalry. They was trying to start something with her in Isla Dawn beforehand. That's why they was stating that she in a rematch. And looks like they're gonna try to do a program with those two. So yes, and it's funny that you said that, because my next question was gonna be something similar about that and NXT together. But I like what y'all said about the Cruiserweight title. I feel like that title should main event the show, and that will make that show worth watching and make it feel like in it on TakeOver level, because that has the most, and none of the other matches are just freshly done. That's the only match that wouldn't be freshly done, so it deserves the main event, and it would just give a different feel to NXT that they'll allow any title to main event the show or whatever has the hottest feud. And I feel like the last match on that card would be Dream versus Kushida, since they usually have five matches. So my question to you guys would be, it's a two-parter. What are y'all five matches on this show? Since we probably only know three so far, what would be the other two? And how do y'all guys think about this? They listed Pete Dunne on the NXT UK show. They introduced him as a producer, but they have him as an NXT wrestler. So I guess whenever he's able to come back, he'll be over there. What do you guys think about that? And if he do come back, would that add some flavor to the single scene in the main title?
I don't know what they do with Pete Dunne now. They certainly still need him to be a babyface since they're still, it seems like they're light on that side of the aisle. So hopefully he's coming back. I would love to see a little bit more Pete Dunne, but, all the stuff that he had going doesn't exist anymore. You can put him into a thing with Timothy Thatcher, but Thatcher really does have to win some matches. As good as he is, he's losing all his high profile matches. And, which is the main giveaway that he couldn't be the one in tonight's match, even though we know that he and Finn can go. As for the five matches, we've got O'Reilly versus Finn. We've got Candice and Io. I would leave the tag team match off. It's going to be thrown together last minute. And either way, Breezango versus Undisputed Era or Breezango versus Burch and Lorcan doesn't feel takeover-y to me. I would leave it off. North American Championship, we know that we got Priest and Gargano because we know we're going to have that. I would also do, Kushida and Dream, I guess, could get that spot. Rhea and Raquel could be five, and then I would love for there to be six as there were last time, and that would leave room for the cruisers. And then, as I say, just leave the tag off and try to continue building that tag team division before it starts being on TakeOver again, Tom.
Did you mention Gargano Priest?
I did.
Okay.
Did I somehow end up with seven?
I think you undercounted, but whatever. I was checking myself on that. I think that Darrell's lineup that you seem to agree with as well is probably what we'll end up with, as much as I would like to swap Kushida Dream for Reyna and Rhea. Blanking on second part of the question. Oh, Pete Dunne. I don't have a strong opinion on this. I don't know, but I would think that it seems like he's probably still just saying, like, you know what, you guys are doing this whole wrestling during the pandemic thing. I'm just chilling with my new daughter. I suspect that his appearance on NXT UK will just be virtual. Maybe I'll be wrong and this will all come shattering down. But yeah, I don't have a particularly strong opinion on it because it is quite a question mark. But at the same time, I think that Pete Dunne is a big enough deal and should be treated like a big enough deal that I don't mind him getting a little featured spot like this, but if you're going to use him as a wrestler, it should be in, like you see with Tommaso Ciampa. He's probably like the Tommaso Ciampa of NXT UK in that everything that he does should feel like a big deal. And when you've got Ilya Dragunov challenging for the title, and I just don't know if you just throw him back in there for the sake of throwing him in there.
Nate?
All right, so the lineup, I kind of came up with the same lineup that you guys did, so I'll leave it at that. And then as far as Pete Dunne, there are just so many questions. Like I don't really have like a definitive answer or direction that I think they're necessarily going to go. If he comes back to the States, he comes back to the NXT US product. Like Kelly said, everything he was doing is gone. The only thing that he could do that had, any tie-in to what he was doing would be a feud with Thatcher. And I wouldn't want to see that until, like Kelly said, I would want to see that until Thatcher got some wins under his belt. For the way that Thatcher's being built up right now, he's losing all of his high profile matches, and it kind of, I don't think he's defined down yet, but if he keeps losing, people aren't going to take him seriously. It's like, oh yeah, you're going to kick my ass. I don't think so. That's the only thing that I can really think of that he would come back to NXT US to do, unless they were going to slot him into a completely brand new, program, which is probably what they'd have to do, unless they were going to bring him up to the main roster, which I really I wouldn't want to see. I'm still bitter about Mia Yim and Mercedes Martinez.
He could get renamed something awesome like Rebar.
Oh, you know, I wanted to do that tonight during introductions. I wanted to try and rename us all the Retribution names. I completely forgot about it.
I called Taserface.
Oh, I wanted Taserface. Fine.
Metaphorical.
God, I don't even remember what the hell I was talking about. Pete Dunne.
Not wanting.
I thought of one for myself, and I was like, I can't say that on this show.
Pete Dunne, yeah. So, I don't want to necessarily see him come back to the main roster. If he does come back, to NXT US, then I want to see him come back to NXT US. If they leave him, I mean, he's obviously going to have this appearance in NXT UK. I wouldn't be opposed to him staying in NXT UK either, to kind of give them a little more star power and things like that. Obviously, he'd be closer to home and his daughter too, which is probably a plus personally for him. Like you guys are saying, Pete Dunne is a big enough deal where he should have a spotlight on him, especially with that, everything he did with Riddle and tag titles, broserweights, all that, and even the stuff he did before all of that, he's deserving of that spot. So I feel like he would be a bigger fish in a smaller pond if he stayed in the UK. On NXT UK, probably be a bigger name on the smaller show. He may get a little more lost in the shuffle if he came back to the US. However, that's where I would like to see him. And, I think he'd be better utilized there, but, obviously we'll see what happens.
Darrell, if you got one more, go ahead. And either way, we'll start running for the finish line here.
Okay, last one. I guess you guys are right. They are kind of giving Austin Theory like a push kind of, but a punishment also by having him take the pins. He looked very nice in these matches. I like the quick match that he – I like – it wasn't quick, but it's still, to me, a quick match that he had tonight. Where do you all see him going? And my last words to you guys right now – my NXT UK will probably have the better tag team division, even though they've been off for 6 months. And that's what they pride themselves on, is their tag team division in NXT UK, US. So just those two things, and I'm out of here.
All right. Thanks, as always, for the call. And, there's been some really cool tag team stuff that's happened over there. There was a tag team triple threat at one of the NXT UK pay-per-views that has to be seen to be believed. It was one of the matches of the year. Okay, so he asked a question, and now because I was talking about that, I forgot what our theory. Okay, so Theory goes under Damian Priest in a non-title match. 11:04, Priest wins with the Reckoning, as you would think. Theory is losing all the matches during this period of promotion for him. I don't want to call it a push exactly, because he's not winning, but he's getting some valuable time on TV, and he's allowing his character to get out there. He's good at a lot of aspects of this, which really make whatever problems he had annoying. But he's far from the only one in that boat. And I think that, and I suggested this last week, but I think he gets away with it a tiny bit more because he is a young, stupid ass kid. And when you're a young kid, you make stupid mistakes, and they are a little more forgivable than when you're getting a little bit older. And that said, I don't know the width and breadth of all the things that he did, and I don't think any of us really know the whole story on all this, because WWE sure as hell isn't telling us. Damian Priest over Theory in 11:04. This match got probably about 5 minutes more than I thought it would, but it was good. I don't know what this still feels punishment-y from Theory because he was on the main roster. As Tom said last week, it seems like that might have been an audible where a team needed a member and somebody needed to go there. But it's strange, even in COVID era, to get the audible and say, oh, hey, we need you for a tag team match at WrestleMania. That seems like a hell of a thing to be called up for. And somebody there has an awful lot of trust in him. And he really, really is a good tool heel. He jaws a lot, and he's pretty good at it, and he's annoying, and he's good at all that. So, as always, hard to talk about Theory without wondering what all is out there about him. But for me, he's got a pretty high ceiling if none of what's out there ends up being worse, Tom.
Yeah, the call-up was weird because they did not make him seem like anything other than just a guy that they pulled up because they had to or because they felt they had to. I mean, they barely even introduced him. They were just like, oh, by the way, here's Austin Theory. They played his music for 5 seconds, cut it off, and then he was off to the races. And then the thing I was talking about a week or two ago was that it seems like, well, at the time, I was like, well, this Rollins Mysterio storyline has to be over by now. It seems like they blew it off. So, you know, I just don't think that position is there for Theory anymore. And they thought they could utilize him better on NXT. But Rollins and Mysterio are still feuding. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you covered the Theory thing perfectly well. You know, I just wish that it's the thing I keep saying over and over again. I wish WWE was more transparent about this, because then we could feel better about knowing for sure what the accusation was. And I have looked into that a little bit more, so I'm a little bit more brushed up on it. But then what the determination was, what the end result of the investigation was, and what the ramification was, because I also saw it reported by some other source that he was apparently suspended. But it's just like, okay, but can I get that confirmed by the company that did it? And you know, again, like the Sammy Guevara thing in AEW. And regarding his ring work, yes, my favorite thing about him for his great physical prowess, my favorite thing about him is how he jaws during the matches. And I mentioned that before. He did that in the match against Tyler Breeze in the first NXT episode without a crowd. And I still remember it because it was very effective. And the term that's been getting thrown around the torch about him is that he's a bump machine, and I can't disagree there. He sells really, really well, and people who sell really, really well, just like with Timothy Thatcher last week, are the exact kind of people that I like seeing with Damian Priest right now, because Damian Priest is working very hard to come off very, very well in the ring, and he is enjoying a very strong early title run here. So even though I agree this went significantly longer than I thought it was going to or needed to, by the end, I appreciated it being there because Priest just looked fantastic. Of course, I will also mention that because I can't imagine there's much to mine out of them if you were planning on bringing them up individually. We got a lot of interview segments tonight, three of them surrounding this Damian Priest thing. Damian Priest's individual interview was leagues ahead of what he did a week or two ago, where he sounded scripted, but he got away with it because he's innately cool. This time, he just seemed not just cool, calm, collected, but confident as well. This seemed like exactly who he is, and he's just swimming through life and being successful at doing it. So I really liked his individual interview. And the other one...
And he didn't say heelish things this week. He truly came off as a babyface.
That is true. And the other ones were with EO, and then LeRae, Gargano, and Priest all got involved, leading to next week's mixed tag. And the other one was with, it was with Austin Theory, and then Gargano got involved. And those are the most egregious thing in the build to this take under. You know, the past two takeovers, I've been critical of the fact that we just got it barfed out on social media that, oh, by the way, we're going to throw Finn Balor in a random match rather than something that you might care about more. And then something that we've actually more aptly, something that we've actually put care and time into building. But now for Take Under, we get the North American title is that match where they just barf it out on social media And tonight, if this was the first episode of NXT that you've watched in a while, you would think that Priest versus Gargano has been building for weeks. But nope, this was night number one.
Yeah, and that that is kind of annoying. Like, no post-match beatdown is going to a feud make. It's just literally to hide the fact that there's no build here. And that is kind of annoying. I'm actually way more excited for next week's Priest and Io Shirai against the Garganos. I think that'll be way more interesting. And maybe we'll get something out of that that makes it feel like this feud is warranted. But Gargano, to this point, I mean, he's been feuding with Tegan Nox. And so that's all we got. So, yeah. Anyway, on Priest versus Theory and the various things leading to Priest Gargano, Nate.
Okay, so Priest and Theory, I really enjoyed the match. I have trouble enjoying Austin Theory's matches for a lot of the reasons you guys talked about. I'm not going to sit here and rehash everything. But, I kind of give for pretty much the same reason that you said is I give Theory a little bit of credit or not credit, a little bit of leeway rather because he's just a young and stupid kid. I still am a little bit leery because, NXT and WWE have been, they haven't kind of come out and been transparent with a lot of the stuff with him, Dream, and others. So it's a little like you almost feel icky. And I keep using that word. It's the best word I can come up with to describe it. You just kind of feel icky because you don't know, are you getting behind somebody you shouldn't be getting behind? So I don't know. All that aside, though, I really definitely enjoyed the match. I felt like, last week I said it about Priest. It was the first time that I felt like it was a big match. He came across as a star for me. And I felt like that came across again tonight in this match. It definitely went a little bit longer than I expected, maybe about a minute and a half longer than I kind of had it pinned in my head for going. He certainly made Priest look good. I think Tom said the term bump machine, perfect term for Theory. If all of the allegations against him are a thing of the past and nothing else comes up ever again and whatever, I agree. I think he's got a very, very high ceiling. He's got a great look. He's got a great moveset. He seems to be able to handle himself on the mic decently. I wouldn't say he's the best talker in the world, but he's decent. But he's still young. He's got a lot of room to grow and learn and develop. So and I think he's light years ahead of where a lot of people are at his age. So I think there's a lot of room for him to grow as long as he keeps his nose clean. There was two things you were throwing me about.
Just the promotion of the Priest and Gargano business.
Oh yeah. So I all on board with that too. The Io Shirai and Damian Priest pairing is not one that I would have thought of or thought about. But it's intriguing and it makes sense considering what they're trying to do, I guess, which kind of doesn't necessarily make sense considering, they, as you said earlier, they surprised themselves with the takeover and they're trying to figure out how the hell to fill it. That's not going to be on takeover, but you know what I mean? The intergender tag match. It certainly worked for me. I'm really, really digging all of the heel work that Candace and Johnny are doing. It's like for everything that I liked about both of those characters as faces, it's like I love them even more as heels, especially in this kind of incarnation. The dinner with the Gargano segments, where at first I wasn't really a big fan. They grew on me, especially the last set of them with Tegan. This is kind of the next thing for Candace. I think I kind of feel like this is more of a, obviously they're combining the feud between, Gargano and Priest and Lorray and, Knox here, but I feel like this is probably more of a spotlight on the women than the guys, which is the way it should be, because I mean they've been building EO and Candace for quite some time now, comparatively to the one night build of or at least so far the one night build between Priest and Gargano. So you know, it kind of feels like that, at least yeah, that's kind of my interpretation, is it kind of feels like it's a little more focused on the women. Fine by me. Looking forward to the feud, and I'm hoping to see some interesting like double team offense between with Shirai and Priest, like, you know, it's something something awesome, like a moonsault off Priest's shoulders. He's tall enough, you know, something cool like that would be sweet.
Yeah, there's probably some way they could work their finishers together. Yeah, he could do Reckoning to Johnny, and then have EO hit a moonsault as well before he makes the cover. But I don't know. I guess we shall see. There were three other matches, and none of them on their own were really big enough to warrant their own segment here. We'd just be thrown around in circles real quick. So let's mash them all together into one miasma of garbage. Jake Atlas versus Tommaso Ciampa. This went 4:48. I guess it's about what you'd think. Maybe it went 2 minutes longer than you'd think, but Atlas, they made him look somewhat good before Tommaso hit him with Willow's bell, then decided he wasn't going to pin him there. He wanted to do fairy tale ending also. I thought maybe he'd pick him up and then do air raid crash after that, but he didn't. He decided to go with the second finisher and pin him. We got the wacky tag team of Roderick Strong and Danny Burch went over Fabian Aichner and Raul Mendoza. I didn't think that's the way it was going to go, because I really did think that Legado del Fantasma would get the nod soon, but apparently not. And in hindsight, it probably makes sense that Undisputed Era's story will continue to burn, so you might as well have Roddy and Bobby. But if Bobby's got the COVIDs, then do you still do that? I don't know. This went 10:01. Roddy and Burch over Aichner and Mendoza. And we also got, speaking of bump machines, Antonio De Luca is one. He's a smaller guy that was able to be a great bump machine for 92 seconds for Ridge Holland. We got a Ridge Holland vignette. This is a guy I really, really like from his work in NXT UK. He is very snug. He will murder you. He's terrifying, and I love him. So Ridge Holland goes over Antonio De Luca in a minute and 32 seconds after, was it a Beal early on? What happened there? Oh, no, it was kind of a pounce, a launch across the ring. Then some headbutts in the corner that just looked so mean. Good stuff. Really, really like Ridge, and I can't wait to see how far he's able to move up. So on the riffraff matches, Tom.
I definitely liked the video package. I liked that Ridge Holland referred to his younger self as Little Ridgey. And unlike with formerly rugby gimmicked Cesaro, there actually is footage of Luke Menzies being rough on a rugby field. So I really like that they show that to save people a trip to Wikipedia to look it up. It's legitimate. So I thought that was good and did maybe even a better job of putting him over than the actual match. I must have misunderstood. I know the point was for it to sound confusing, but I must have misunderstood the goofy tag stipulation, because I thought that then the winners were going to face off in a singles match right there. And I was going to say, well, step aside.
So did I.
Yeah. I was like, step aside, Eliminator Gauntlet. We've got
make that three.
Yeah. So I actually, it's silly. Like, why would tag team contenders be decided in this way? But I actually kind of like it. Like, I understand the logistics as to why it's stupid, but I can't mount too much of an argument against it, because I kind of enjoy the framing of it. Match was fine. I wonder how/if Maverick and Dane are going to factor into it. One of the many conspicuous absences tonight was Tyler Breeze, but we got that Fandango package of him hearkening back to the Fashion Police but there was nothing actually funny here. So it mostly reminded me, and the Fashion Police stuff on SmackDown Live, as it was actually really funny. So this made me think of like a Friedberg and Seltzer parody movie, where instead of writing new jokes, they just reference stuff. So it's the quote unquote comedy of recognition, where instead of laughing at a new joke using old ingredients that you're familiar with, you're just going, oh, I remember that. Oh, I remember that. So that was kind of garbage. But then
Tony Soprano said, remember when is the lowest form of conversation. There you go.
There we go. Thankfully, there's more to NXT 8 years back than just that. Although Fandango is quite a presence on it as well. We still had Mike Dalton and Johnny Curtis back then. But Ciampa Atlas, yeah, it, not to the extent of Theory Priest, but this went longer than I expected it to. Of course, like I've said over and over again, Atlas has all the talent in the world. I like that he at least got a little bit of offense in at the beginning, which I did expect, but then I expected Ciampa to just full on destroy him. And of course we eventually got there. But that's what I expected. And I mean, with O'Reilly in the Eliminator Gauntlet, you can understand why he didn't cross paths with Ciampa, but it is a little weird that that's just a loose hanging thread from last week. Let's see, do I have anything else on that? I don't think so. Just, it was interesting. I'm not sure if it was because he couldn't quite get it in the end or if he has changed what the fairy tale ending is. Tom Phillips ended up calling it as a modified version of the fairy tale ending.
Oh, that's right. He did say that. And I just saw him setting it up. So I'm already looking at my timer because I know that the bell's about to ring.
Right.
So I don't even know how it was modified. Nate on the three also ran matches.
All right. I'll start with Ciampa and Atlas. So this went a couple minutes longer than I expected it to as well. But I actually really liked this. So Atlas is he's somebody that I've kind of, I wouldn't say I've had my eye on him or I've been gravitating towards him, but I mean, anytime he's on TV, I've got my eyes on the screen. He's definitely somebody that has caught my eye, and I feel like he's certainly got a decent ceiling. I don't know if it's necessarily as high as like, you know, Theories, but it could be, I think, given time. He actually got a lot more offense against Ciampa than I expected here, which I think was good because, you know, the past couple times that the two of them have touched, it's been, I mean, just essentially a one-sided thing with Ciampa taking out Atlas. And just the simple fact that they put him in a match against Ciampa. Ciampa, no, he's not the champion right now, and he's not doing anything super high profile, but he doesn't have to. He's Tommaso Ciampa in NXT. I mean, this is a big comparison, but I'm going to make it anyway. I mean, he's kind of like the Undertaker or something like that. In the WWE environment, you know, he's kind of like that. His name precedes him, I guess. The simple fact they put Jake Atlas with Ciampa says something they're either really high on him, they've got something planned for him, something along those lines, or maybe just the fact that, you know, he was going to give Ciampa a good match. I don't know. But, I've talked about this match longer than it was, so we'll leave it at that. Going to the Ridge Holland match, it was fine. It was a squash match. I really liked the bumping that Antonio DeLuca did. He really did make Ridge Holland look super menacing, super scary. He's got that, I mean, he's got that look anyway about him. It's kind of like, it's almost kind of like a little bit more of a, like you take Dexter Lumis and just kind of give him a little bit more personality. And it's kind of a little bit of that look. And I like it. He's certainly not some, especially with his rugby background, certainly not somebody that I would want to trifle with whatsoever. really, really glad that he's back here. He's somebody I completely forgot about. I mean, you know, he debuted, you know, in the NXT and NXT US environment, and then kind of went away after, you know, just shortly after the debut, and he was kind of out of sight, out of mind. I saw the vignette tonight, and I was like, oh yeah, Ridge Holland, sweet. So I'm all for that. My the biggest thing about this is Sami Zayn is no longer wearing a flat cap, and I'm hoping that Ridge Holland will wear that flat cap or driver's cap, whatever you want to call it, long enough that it makes it into the next 2K game, so I can still continue to wearing my hat as a created wrestler.
Right.
Okay. And then last but not least, we got the tag team thing. So I actually was probably a little bit higher on this than both you guys, and I know Tom said he liked it. I think it was just kind of the craziness and the weird just zaniness of this match is why I liked it. And maybe probably another night I would have hated it because of the weird and wackiness and zaniness. But I'm in a good, weird, wacky, zany mood tonight, so hey, why not? But you know, it's in a way, it's kind of like, okay, why would you do it this way? Why would you take, you know, four guys from established tag teams, mix them together, and you know, kind of like you're obviously trying to become the tag team champions. You want to take your tag team, that your established tag team, and become the best tag team. Why would you try to kind of start that process with somebody that's not your tag team partner? It doesn't make sense in the grand scheme of things if you're trying to look at wrestling like, you know, a legit contest.
Well, this entire show was people trying to get championship shots,
exactly,
in matches that were not what they would be once they get to the championship match.
Oh, 100%. Overall, it worked. Like, I was really like, once they announced it, like, I had no idea what the hell Fandango was really talking about. I, you know, the way that I took it was kind of what happened, you know, is I kind of thought he meant, you know, one person from each team, you know, and then, but it, like you guys were saying earlier, I thought that whoever the winners were going to face off right then and there. And that's obviously, you know, not what happened. It looks like there's going to be a tag team match between Undisputed Era and, Lorcan and Birch. So, the thing that really kind of like hooked me was, how is Birch and Strong, or how are they going to coexist? How is Eichner and Mendoza going to coexist? Are they going to be able to work together? They're going to be, you know, and for the most part, I feel like both teams kind of did work pretty, you know, cohesive. You know, there was obviously, you know, a lot of, you know, at least a talk from the announcers, like, you know, every man for themselves, everybody's kind of watching their back. And, you know, you could see that to a point too. But, you know, I think there was a little bit more teamwork between these two mismatched teams than I expected to see anyway. I liked it. It was weird. It was probably not everybody's cup of tea, but, I enjoyed it. So, and we got to see Danny Burch get a, you know, actually get a win. I was happy with that.
I guess there's that. We'll get to see him lose soon enough.
Yes.
Because they're about to face Undisputed Era again. Okay. Corey Taylor debuted a song, so that's definitely something I had to endure. We also got two more emails. This is from JB, who actually sent a follow-up email. It's JB from Detroit. Reportedly, there were several last-second changes made to tonight's show due to a COVID outbreak among NXT talent. If true, and you had to guess what were a few of the last-minute audibles called, was anything blatantly obvious to you? I think possibly Candace getting the shot with EO at TakeOver was one. As always, love the show, and go VIP! Also, do you think they're overdoing the Tegan Knox attack and leaving her with a knee injury angle outside of matches? As has been often mentioned on the show, we don't even really know who Tegan is. I think that they risk making her look like a hapless loser that no one cares about rather than a sympathetic babyface if they fail to properly tell her story and have her continually beat up. I gotta say, what they're doing with Tegan right now is actually probably my favorite thing they've done with Tegan in a while. And if you've got the knee thing and she's a babyface, you might as well exploit it, especially when Candace has gone so dark. And as I said earlier in the show, I think this benefits Tegan more than a basic appearance in the Battle Royal that she also would not have won. I'm not so sure that this is a that this is an audible, because Rhea and Ripley eliminating each other seems like what that always would have happened there. And I can't think of who else would have won this. Like, nobody else really makes sense to be the one to go on to face EO at TakeOver that hasn't recently done it. I would say the biggest changes to this might have been the fact that, well, we didn't see either of our two main officials, Drake Wirtz or D.A. Brewer. We didn't see Vic, and there was no mention of why, even though they said Wade Barrett is not here this week. So that could be it. I don't know. And then with the tag teams, I think easily this could have been an audible, because we did not see Bobby Fish all night. We also didn't see the other three partners, but that could have been because we weren't going to see one of the partners regardless. It seems like Bobby Fish is the safest bet, because we didn't see him in the tag match, and we also didn't see him at the end of Kyle O'Reilly's big win. I would say those are probably among the bigger changes that that we maybe got, Tom.
Just look at Instagram feeds. They're not being private about it. I guess I'll just say the name Drake Wirtz and move on, so I don't get stuck in that mire. I do not think at all that the women's situation was an audible, particularly because, as alluded to earlier, there are only two women on the active slash available women's rosters between NXT and the Performance Center that were not in the Battle Royal, those being Jessi Kamea and Santana Garrett. For what it's worth, Jessi Kamea did not wear a mask during those couple weeks where it was optional behind the plexiglass, and Santana Garrett was one of the first people I saw posting about breaking quarantine on social media back in April. So for whatever that's worth, who knows, but they were the only two that weren't there, and people like Rita Reyes and Emily Anzulis were. So there you go. And I didn't include Brianna Brandy in that, because Brianna Brandy has been, she seems like she's sort of the new co-host of Raw Underground. So I did not include her on that, in that. But I do think that the entire tag situation was screwed up by this. I think that the entire North American title challenger situation, whatever they may have been leading to there, was screwed up like this, because even though they do have, like, holy crap, poof, there's a takeover out of nowhere, it's still not in NXT's blood to just throw Johnny Gargano out there you just got Mandela affected into the middle of a feud here. It just came out of nowhere. The Ciampa and O'Reilly thing. Like, obviously O'Reilly's in a good position here, even though he absolutely will lose on October 4th. And like I said at the top, I think it's part of an overarching story, and I hope it ultimately ends with Kyle O'Reilly being the greatest babyface that the world's ever seen. Next to Adam Cole, that is. They were obviously heading towards something with Kyle and Ciampa, and they will now have to circle back around to that. And if they do so deftly, maybe they could even do so well that I will end up regretting having criticized them about it in the first place, because it'll seem like it was all part of the plan.
Anything else on that question, Nate? Otherwise, we got one more email.
No, I think you guys pretty much hit the nail on the head. I think probably the North American title match is really the biggest thing that stands out. The North American title feud's biggest thing stands out to me, but the women's battle royal, everything you guys just mentioned, I think are in the absence of the two referees. Little sidebar is there was one time I was watching NXT maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, and I hit pause, and it happened to be on Drake Wirtz, and he was making a really stupid looking face, and from then on he has been known in my household as Derp Ref. So I guess that could kind of go along with what else we've been talking about Drake Wirtz tonight.
Yeah. Just yet another situation where he's one of the best referees working right now, and it's just disappointing to see what's on the personal side of it. And for what it's worth, like, you know, we mentioned specific names, but even the people who are being careful, even the people who are wearing masks, you look at their social media feeds, and they are out at restaurants and they are out at amusement parks. And even if they're distancing and wearing masks, they're still putting themselves at unnecessary risks when they are in a contact sport for work. To be fair, this is coming from someone who only goes to work. And other than that, I am just holding myself and my family up because I do not want to look back on this and look at any instance of it where I feel like, darn, I could have been more careful. I don't know if I asymptomatically passed anything on. So you're hearing from somebody who is being extremely careful about this, but it seems like almost no one this side of the best roommates ever, Dakota, Shayna, Mia, and Jessamine are being careful.
All right. We have one more email. This is from our friend Jack Argyle. Hey guys, hope you're all good. Just wanted to say your podcast has been a great listen to for me since NXT went live, and enjoy all your insights very much and look forward to Thursday mornings. My time to listen. First question. Don't know if you can all recall, I emailed in about a month ago when Adam Cole was about to fight Pat McAfee, and I thought Bobby Fish was ready to attack Cole from behind before placing an arm on his shoulder. Fast forward a few weeks ago, later, when UE first attacked Dane and Maverick, Fish and Strong went on the attack while O'Reilly was hesitant. Then obviously last week again, where O'Reilly came to Atlas's aid. Where do you think this is heading? Maybe Strong and Fish go after Breezango due to the lack of tag teams, and maybe a turn on O'Reilly leads to Cole siding with O'Reilly. Either way, I'm really intrigued and never saw O'Reilly as a singles wrestler in Ring of Honor, but have only heard good things. Second question, there's reportedly a draft coming up in WWE for October. Ignoring the obvious big names like Roman and Sasha, who do you think NXT needs from a Raw or a SmackDown? I'm going outside the box, and maybe Robert Roode back with Ziggler as a tag team as the division is really short. I also would also go with Ricochet, as I don't think that they have any plans for him on Raw. SmackDown, I think Drew Gulak would be an interesting shout for the cruiserweight scene, and can easily be in the North American title scene. What do you guys think? Is there any news on when UK travelers can enter the US and vice versa? Haven't heard much in a while about it. Cheers, guys. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. I don't know anything about travel laws. I have not looked into it at all. I have no plan to do any of that anytime soon. I, too, do not want to look back and think that I didn't do enough. Ricochet is the exact name that I said of late that I thought would maybe make sense to be in NXT. He did very well there, and it does not seem like WWE brass knows what to do with him on the main roster. Gulak is actually an interesting idea as well, and I wouldn't turn down seeing a little bit more of him. And I actually don't hate the idea of Rude Ziggler as much as I thought I would, and it is because of the threadbare scene there, although I don't want a bunch of names being brought over that really do seem like, okay, we failed, let's kick the tires here, and then it just makes it really look like the stepchild brand. I think there's a pretty thin line to walk right there, and I feel like Rude and Ziggler, who lose a lot of matches, are right on that line, Tom.
Yeah, regarding the O'Reilly thing, I think it's interesting to hear from different people like Jack, like people I hear from in my limited circles on Twitter and from each other about where we are on detecting the Kyle O'Reilly thing. And there are people it was actually the exact same week that Jack did email us about Bobby's positioning. Joel from the Tim and Joel podcast, Joel Pearl, he mentioned on Twitter that O'Reilly was the only one who didn't look happy about the fact that they had just run in and beat up Drake Maverick, and that he noticed it before I did, and then I started picking up on things because he had pointed it out. And so it's subtle enough, the character shift has been subtle enough that it's interesting to see different people picking up on it. But the moral of the story here is that everybody seems to be intrigued by it. And you mentioned the Corey Taylor video, which of course had the unfortunate framing of being a Corey Taylor video, but the little interviews to build to the main event in it were fantastic, and each wrestler was sort of in their own element, more or less. I mean, Kushida I'm not sure what that was for him, but like, you got Grimes out by the fake bayou that they're not even pretending isn't just a retention pond behind the performance center anymore. Just it it almost fits. Like, hey, Grimey, time to cut a promo. Let's step outside next to the let's hop the fence over into the retention pond here. Or you know, maybe Jeremy Borash doesn't even hop over. He just flies his drone over the fence, and Grimey just stands there and tries not to fall in. The tall grass makes those retention ponds deceptively steep, and I won't tell you how I know that. Specifically the Kyle O'Reilly part of that video was fantastic, and I think it's the first time we've heard Kyle speak in that voice on TV. You know, on social media he carries that, especially recently. I think it was when he posted that video responding to the fact that he had been entered in the Gauntlet Eliminator. It's just such a genuine, natural baby face voice. It doesn't feel forced at all. It feels like this is who this guy really is, and you just want to love him. You don't even have to want to, you just do. Thumbs up all around there. And I wanted to have a really cool, like, oh my God, I didn't think of that. I wanted to have an awesome answer for who NXT should draft from the main roster. But I don't have anybody other than, indeed, Ricochet, because he's not much is being done with him. Yeah, he's involved in this Hurt Business feud, which I've said I for all the garbage that's surrounding it, like Retribution and whatnot, Hurt Business is just so damn cool. And for as bad as Raw was, I still at least got some enjoyment because Hurt Business was all over it and them just strutting out to their cool music. And, you know, that's going real well. But obviously Ricochet isn't going to end up, you know, a winner at the end of this unless he joins them. So yeah, just bring him back down, because indeed he did extremely well. I still say he had one of the best NXT runs that anyone has ever had. And it was almost exactly a year on TV before he, between his debut and his call up. And it just hasn't really gone his way, even though, you know, he's got a Brock Lesnar match to his credit, which isn't nothing. But you know, it was just somebody for Brock to get a paycheck against in Saudi Arabia. So, there are other names that come to mind and other ones that I would love to see back in NXT, but just looking at the climate right now and heading into when this draft is rumored to be taking place, nobody like a Ruby Riott, for example, feels like they're in a position to be drawn away with what they're currently embroiled with. I think that covers it.
Nate. All right. So, I'm just going to talk about the draft, cause, the other topic I think you guys covered pretty well here, and we're going late. So as far as the draft goes, I pulled out a few names here. I've got a male superstar, I've got a female superstar, and then I have I actually picked out two tag teams because I feel like either one could work. Doesn't really matter which, to me anyway. I'm going to start with I'll start with the tag team. So I'm going with either the Street Profits or the Viking Raiders. And I'm kind of leaning more towards the Raiders because I think the Profits have had a little bit more success, seeing as the tag champs, and or at least they were. I think they still are according to the roster page. I think the Raiders. And the reason I say that is, I feel like they had a little bit of a lackluster run in NXT. I mean, they were billed relatively strong, but you know, just the name changes and all this stuff. And then of course, once they got the main roster, the Viking experience and all this stuff, it kind of defined them down. And I feel like they haven't really gotten back. And like, you know, I've seen these guys on the indies and they're just so good. They're so good. And I feel like they're not able to show what they can really do, in the environment they've been in. So actually I talked myself into the Raiders over the Profits there. For the women, this is a weird one, but I'm going with Naomi. Now, she doesn't have ties to NXT, but she is a former SmackDown champion. She's not somebody that I feel like, the main roster could kind of probably, they wouldn't necessarily miss if she was gone, but I think she could also bring some name value, to NXT, from kind of the more casual fan that, the more familiar with, the main roster products. So I'm going with her. And then this is a big one. This is a big one for the main, for the male wrestler here, but I'm going with Daniel Bryan. Now, he has some sort, some ties to NXT, going back to the game show era of NXT. But, you know, he doesn't really have any ties to the current version of NXT. However, he's not, he hasn't really done anything major since, you know, he's returned. I mean, yeah, a couple things, but like relatively, you know, in the last, you know, handful of months, I mean, he was doing that stuff with Gulak, you know, but I feel like he could be, he could go down to NXT, feud with these guys. I mean, he's always talking about how he wants to put over, you know, other talent, you know, new talent, new younger guys. So go down there, do that. You know, that's kind of what he's doing on SmackDown, but it's, you know, especially like with Gulak, you know, and things like that. But yeah, I feel like he could really come down, A, put some more eyeballs on the NXT product because it's Daniel Bryan. But then, I mean, think of the matches that he could have with some of these guys, you know, like Tommaso Ciampa or Gargano or whatever. It'd be pretty cool. I think, you know, I think that would be a good move.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm interested to see if they even get mixed up in it. I don't know if they said they were, but the last time they did a draft, they specifically said NXT was going to be separate of it, or Triple H had said they were going to be separate of it. I don't remember. I do a lot of these media calls, and I assume I'll be doing another one soon, depending on what day it is, and assuming I have that day free. So, anyway, I believe that is our show. As we said, a busy one. I'm not surprised it took a little bit of time, but we're not that far over what we usually do. I would just like to be under what we usually do. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at Spooky Milk Games. That's me. I don't have anything else to add to that this time. Nate, who are you?
Okay, I'm not muted. I thought I was muted. At Nate Lindberg on Twitter, I do the NXT hits and misses, which you guys should see on pwtorch.com probably tomorrow or Friday.
Tomothy Staup, who are you?
For the honor of Grayskull, I am at Tom Staup. And just for a little cleanup on the conference call, Triple H did say that there were plans to involve NXT in the draft, but that was all, you know, their plans change, who knows. And I just so I don't end up pulling a Candice LeRae battle royal prediction on it, I will say, just I don't want to put that energy out there because it's not what I want, but just now that I know that or was reminded of what my brain didn't quite process when it happened, that apparently this thing that I thought was Josh Briggs is somebody who said that they're coming back for the title. I'm just going to say the name Bobby Roode so I can say that I said it when it turns out to be him.
Yeah, me too.
I restrained myself from saying it earlier, and then I was like, you know what? I don't want to just not say it, and then it turns out to be correct. But, you know, for as slapdash as things are having to be on Wednesday nights right now on USA, I will say that at least the silver lining is that I do not currently have a headache from people banging on that damned plexiglass. Thank you.
There you go. On that last conference call, did Triple H also use the term ebb and flow about 15 times?
he probably did.
He probably did.
I don't remember specifically, but that's the last one of his.
Yep. All right, folks. Well, we will see you next week with what apparently is a go-home show. Can you believe it? That's wild. So, and then we will see you the following Saturday on what I believe will be a VIP version of our show when we banter about this, where I may or may not be there because I'll probably be on a post-show conference call with old Trips. All right, folks. That's it for us. We will see you in 7.